The following is a home program entitled Importance of the Human Form of Life, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 24th, 2015, in Melbourne, Australia.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Pradijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Svaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschadvadeshatarine. So, now you have gotten a human body. So, what does that mean? What is the importance of that human body? There are 8,400,000 different species of life. And out of that, the human form is very rare, actually. Very, very rare. What distinguishes human life from animal life? The distinguishing factor is this. The human being can inquire what is the nature of the Absolute Truth. This is the statement of the Vedanta Sutra. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now you have a human form, you must utilize it to inquire what is the Absolute Truth. So, where do you inquire? You have to inquire from someone who is enlightened, a bona fide spiritual master. This is why it is stated very clearly by Krishna himself, who is the original spiritual master. He states very clearly in chapter number 4, text number 34, he says, Tadvidi pranipatena paripashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam Ganinas tattva darshinaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively. Render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. This is the order of Krishna, the supreme authority. Well, why can't I just approach Krishna? Well, he's not here right now physically. You can't see him. Of course, he's present, but we don't have the eyes to see Krishna in our present conditioned state. The fact is, Krishna is present, but we cannot see him, you see. Our eyes are covered by material consciousness. But the spiritual master is the mercy manifestation of Krishna. Krishna kindly appears in the form of the spiritual master. Not that the spiritual master is Krishna, but he is the pure representative of Krishna. So by coming in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, that's as good as coming in contact with Krishna. Therefore, Krishna encourages us. He instructs us. This is what you do. You have to go to a spiritual master. You have to serve him. You have to inquire from him. You have to hear from him. In this way, become the disciple of the spiritual master. And then by the mercy of the spiritual master, you will become realized in Krishna consciousness. This is the science of bhakti. By the mercy of Krishna, you get Guru. And then by the mercy of Guru, you get Krishna. So, what is the main point of these teachings coming from Guru and Krishna? The main point is this. As I was speaking a few moments ago, you have this very rare opportunity in the human life. If you simply utilize this human life to serve your senses, that's animalistic. The animals do that. All they do is serve their sensual desires. If all you do is serve your sensual desires, you're on the animal platform, and you know what kind of body you'll get in your next life? An animal body. Human life is meant for self-realization. So, to qualify yourself to at least be a human being in your next life, you have to take up the pathway of self-realization. And practically nobody is doing it in the modern day world. That means practically everyone is going to the animal kingdom in their next lives. The whole human civilization is practically going down to the animal kingdom in their next lives. But anyone who seriously takes up this pathway of spiritual awakening, they will at least be a human being in their next life, so they can continue the process. And if they take it very seriously, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, Krishna says, punar janma navijate, they will not take birth again in this material world. So you can do what you like. The culture nowadays is enjoy your senses. I'm young, I can enjoy, you see, one can think. I can go here, I can do that, I can go to the movies, I can do this, I can enjoy that. So many things I can enjoy. Well, I'll think about self-realization when I'm later on, you see. Right now I'm young, I want to enjoy my senses, have a great time, whoop it up, party, have a great time, yeah. Well, you ever heard anybody dying when they were young? It happens all the time. The real point is, you better be ready now, because death can come at any time. You better take it seriously now, your human form of life. You better take it seriously now, because you never know when you're going to leave your body. And if you can leave your body in Krishna consciousness, you will not take birth again. You will attain the spiritual world. If you leave your body in party consciousness, you become a party, literally, they say party animals, it's a very good term. You become an animal. And literally become an animal. A dog, a monkey, a chimpanzee, an orangutan, a snake. Are you ready? Is it? It's like these meat eaters, they'll become cows to be slaughtered in the next life. These people who go to McDonald's, you see, they're simply buying themselves a body that will be slaughtered in the next life. That's all. So one has to become learned. What is the law of karma? How I can live my life in such a way that I will not be implicated in the cycle of birth and death. So the bona fide spiritual master teaches us, you see. I was very fortunate to come into personal contact with the most empowered spiritual master of the entire Kali Yuga. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Very, very fortunate. So now I'm trying to share with you the benefit of the good fortune that I achieved. I know how difficult it was without Krishna consciousness in my life. I very well remember how difficult it was when I was simply on the material platform trying to be happy. It doesn't work. There's no such thing as material happiness. It's only an illusion of happiness. And the little bubble pops after a while. It's like my dad told me, he said, son, when I was in high school, he said, son, your college days are going to be the happiest days of your whole life. And as soon as he dropped me off at the dorm, I was miserable. And I was thinking, wow, this is the happiest days of my life. What's my whole life going to be like? You see? So the thing is, you really have to find out what is actually the real happiness, and that is on the spiritual level. You're not going to find happiness on the material plane. It does not exist here. It doesn't, because you're a spiritual being. You're not that material body. Therefore, you cannot be happy on the material platform. It's not possible. They give us this hype that we can be happy in making money, job, career, all the external trappings. I guarantee you, you will never be satisfied. You'll never be happy. The way it works is you think, yeah, I just need a little slightly better job, or I just need to graduate. I just need it's right around the corner. My happiness is right around the corner, like the donkey. They put a carrot in front of him, you know. All you need is a little bit more income, and then you'll be happy. Then you get that, and I need a little bit more income, or I need a little bit bigger house, a little bit better car. It's always out there in the future. You never have it in the here and now. But when you become awakened in Krishna consciousness, when you become self-realized, you have it all right here, right now, because you've learned the art of how to connect with God, with Krishna. Not some impersonal energy, but a beautiful person who has unlimited power to bestow all benedictions upon you at every minute. You see? You come into direct contact with Krishna. You develop a loving relationship with Krishna. You see? That's what the spiritual master can do. He has that personal relationship, and he can bring you into that consciousness of a personal relationship with Krishna. So one should take advantage. So, any questions? There's no questions. Here's one. How to beat this argument of people, we have only this life. Who has seen what happens after death? Live now, enjoy, and chill. I don't care if I'm being a dog or cow in the next life. Thank you very much. Who cares about the future? Just enjoy now. This reminds me when I was in high school. I remember I went to high school in a place called Houston, Texas, which is one of the most muggy. Of course, compared to India, it's pretty mellow. But in America, it was mellow. But for Americans, Houston was tough. The humidity was really heavy, and the first air-conditioned baseball stadium in the world was built in Houston, Texas, called the Astrodome. So for Americans, it was tough. For Indians, it would have been a piece of cake, of course, the way you grew up in the Indian climate. But in America, Houston was tough. For American kids, it was tough. But now all the schools are air-conditioned now. But in those days, there was no air-conditioning. So it was tough for us American kids in that atmosphere. So some of the students, they would just drop out and get a job at the gas station, buy a what they call a hot rod, a souped-up car, you know, with a high-powered engine and super-duper transmission and big tires, and it's called peeling rubber. You put your foot on the gas pedal, and the wheels spin, and it makes a loud screech, and then the car just takes off like a rocket. It's called hot rodding. It's an American pastime. The youth back in those days have a hot rod. Vroom, 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 you know, to show off. I'm a big gun because I have my hot rod. So anyway, some of the students dropped out. They got a job at the gas station. They saved up and bought a hot rod. So they would be out there during fifth period physics class, and we're all like, oh, sitting there, you know, gutting it out in the heat and the humidity. And they're out there having a great time in their hot rod, you see. So they're getting that immediate pleasure, and we're doing the austerities of sitting through physics class, you see. But 10 years later, the ones who did the austerity, now they have a nice job, an air-conditioned office, and that guy's still working at the gas station, you see, getting minimum wage at the gas station. So the point is, in Sanskrit it's called Shreya and Preya. Shreya means what is ultimately beneficial, and Preya means what is immediately beneficial. And a foolish person, he will only go after Preya. You see, why should I get a high school diploma? Why should I go to college? I can enjoy right now. But you see, he's relegating himself to a very low level of happiness by doing that. The person who does the austerities, they're buying into a future which will be, you know, much better than the person who doesn't do the austerities. So in reference to this question, you know, if you have any kind of vision of the future, then you would be willing to do austerities to achieve a greater happiness. But if you have no brain, you're completely stupid, you're just an asinine idiot, then you may just, you know, go for what's immediately enjoyable.
But they're already thinking about future, but temporary future. They work hard for the temporary future within this body.
Yeah, you can carry it a step further and see there's something beyond this body. Now, they argue, how do I know there's something beyond this body?
But even within this body, how do they know what will be the future? Tomorrow I can leave the body.
Yeah, yeah. But they say, they may say, well, who cares about the next life? Let me just enjoy now. But the thing is, you are going to have a future, and you are going to have to, you are going to suffer and enjoy in the future depending on what you do now. So therefore, an intelligent person will take to the path of a spiritual awakening to make their future perfect rather than another nightmare that I'm going through now. What would be the first step towards Krishna consciousness? Isn't it chanting? Actually, hearing is the first step. You have to hear first. Otherwise, how do you know what to chant? You see, sometimes I just say chant. You say, what should I chant? Well, just chant. No, you have to hear what you're supposed to chant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. So once you've heard what you're supposed to chant, then you can chant. So chanting is the second thing. Hearing is the first thing. How do I build up the strength and courage to preach, especially to friends? Try preaching to strangers first. Until you get good at it, and then you can work on your friend.
One has to work on oneself, so we automatically will come to how to preach to others.
If you become so nicely fixed in Krishna consciousness, your friends will say, wow, I've never seen you looking so blissful. What's your secret? Why is it important to take up Krishna consciousness in youth? Because death can come at any minute. And whatever your consciousness is at the time of death, that determines your next birth. So, and the other thing is, whatever habit you develop now, that's going to carry. There's an old saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. So you're supposed to start, and you're actually from the very infancy. One's parents are trained one to be Krishna conscious. At least by the age of 5, you should be practicing Krishna consciousness. You see, so I started late. I was like 22 when I started because I didn't have Krishna conscious parents. But I've been practicing ever since I was about 22. So the thing is, the younger you start, as young as possible, because you're creating a mindset for yourself which will go throughout the whole life. If you postpone it, your tendency will be to keep postponing it and keep postponing it and keep postponing it, and you'll never take it up. So you need to take it up now with all seriousness. And otherwise, you're cheating yourself big time.
Not waste time, because any time is gone by, is wasted, and you cannot get it back.
All the gold, like they say in America, they have Fort Knox, a big storage of gold. All the gold in Fort Knox will not buy back 1 minute of lost time. Time is more valuable than money. So use your time very wisely. You, just like people invest money in, you know, to, for some future gain, your time is the greatest investment. How are you investing your time right now? Are you investing it in sense enjoyment, or are you investing it in self-realization, Krishna consciousness? If you invest it in Krishna consciousness, you're going to have a, you're going to amass a fortune worth more than all the diamonds, rubies, golds, and emeralds in the whole world. I can guarantee you. How to remain enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness when difficulties arrive? Difficulties are the greatest opportunity to make spiritual progress. Actually, you should become very enlivened when difficulties come. This is a great opportunity now to take fully shelter of Krishna and make very rapid advancement on this pathway. How does one know when he becomes Krishna conscious? When you're always thinking of Krishna and you're never forgetting him, then you're Krishna conscious. You're really Krishna conscious. Why only Prabhupada, no other spiritual master will do? Actually, we don't say only Prabhupada. Prabhupada is representing a huge lineage of spiritual masters, and we're actually taking shelter of all of them. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Gorkhashar Das Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji, Vishnanath Chakravarti Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada is representing a huge lineage of the most realized teachers in the history of the universe. So we connect with Prabhupada's teachings, we're connecting with a huge lineage of the greatest teachers in the history. It's not only Prabhupada. Prabhupada is representing a huge lineage of teachers. Sometimes devotees tend to fulfill their material desires subconsciously while being engaged in the devotional service. How do we realize where to draw the line? Well, the thing is, if you just try to please Guru and Krishna, then all this stuff will gradually be purified away. We do have all these, you know, the material desires have been sitting in our heart for millions of lifetimes. And they don't go away immediately. But if you take up this process of trying to become a first-class disciple of the spiritual master, a first-class devotee of Krishna, then this stuff will go away gradually in due course. What attracted you to Krishna consciousness? Well, there's a number of things. One thing is, as a youth, I didn't plug into the normal career, you know, mentality. I saw the world as really screwed up, and I could understand the only thing that could really make my life meaningful was to be a part of a spiritual revolution on this planet. I couldn't relate to anything else, really. And I found out that Prabhupada was the one who was really doing it, so I joined, became a member of Prabhupada's movement. I realized that he was doing what actually I wanted to do with my life. My career path was spiritual revolutionary. That was my career path, and I found somebody who was actually doing it. I didn't know how to do it, you see. I tried to do it on my own by writing songs and singing them in so many places. I tried to, but I couldn't do it. I wasn't able to, because to be a spiritual revolutionary, you have to revolutionize your own heart first. I didn't know how to do that. So Prabhupada taught me how to revolutionize my heart and how to revolutionize the world. So that's why it was a no-brainer to become a disciple of Prabhupada. He gave me just what I wanted. I wanted to be a spiritual revolutionary, and Prabhupada taught me how to do it. Very simple thing. Why not another religion? Well, this question is not really correct, because religion is one. There's no such thing as different religions. This idea of different religions is a material conception. Religion comes from the Latin word religio, which means to relink with. So religion means to relink with God. You can do it as a Christian, a Jew, a Hindu, a Jain, a Sikh, a Buddhist, a Muslim. doesn't matter what your external designation is. If you've actually connected with God in loving service, you're religious. That's it. You see? I have students from Christian background, from Hindu background, from Islamic background, you see. From all fields they come to me for training in the ultimate religion, which is pure love of God. So this goes beyond all sectarian designations. Okay, how to deal with a person who comes to ISKCON but does not follow ISKCON and sometimes openly goes against ISKCON and ISKCON devotees? Well, the thing is, don't get into the mentality that this is some kind of a sect. And you know, don't take ISKCON as a sect. That can be another type of sectarian religion if you don't understand really what ISKCON is. That's the first thing. Don't you misunderstand what is the meaning of ISKCON. The thing is, Prabhupada was very kind. He engaged so many people in Krishna's service, even if they couldn't do everything. Just like George Harrison, for example. We don't smoke. That's one of our principles. But George Harrison could not give up smoking. But still, he did so much service, and Prabhupada so much appreciated him, you see. So it's not, well, if you don't follow our rules, you're out, you know. But no, Prabhupada welcomed everybody to be part of this movement. Those who, of course, to be initiated, you have to follow the principles. But, you know, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. But Prabhupada never barred anybody from being a part of this movement to bring a new era of peace and happiness to the whole world. ISKCON is not a sectarian thing, you know. You have to follow these rules, and otherwise you can't. You're not welcome here. We don't love you, or it's that kind of a thing. You know, everybody is welcome to come and take prasadam, to chant and dance, and enjoy the ecstasy of Krishna's name. Whether they're a Catholic or a Muslim, or whether they're an ISKCON member, doesn't matter. Everybody is welcome to come. Actually, ISKCON is an educational institution. How to educate the entire world to come to the platform of pure love of God, you see. So, please don't make ISKCON into some kind of another sectarian religious organization. It's not. It's teaching the science of God, which applies to everyone. So don't misunderstand what is the meaning of ISKCON. How do we attain the spiritual abode of Krishna? This is a child has asked this question. That's very nice. You have to surrender to Krishna. That, my dear Lord Krishna, now I'm fully surrendered unto you, and then you become qualified to enter into his abode. How can we help someone become Krishna conscious? Well, you become the ideal example of Krishna consciousness. And then they'll be inspired by seeing you, by hearing you speak about Krishna. They'll go, wow. You see? You have to become a walking, talking wow factor by your absorption on the transcendental platform. And then the whole world will actually come to Krishna consciousness by your influence. That's the ideal standard we should all try to come to. I'm not making that up. Prabhupada states that. He says, a Krishna conscious being is always thinking how to deliver all of the suffering humanity back to home, back to Godhead. That's what it means to be Krishna conscious. If you're really Krishna conscious, you're thinking, how can I live my life in such a way to influence the whole universe to come to Krishna consciousness? That's what it really means to be a devotee of Krishna. In other words, as Prabhupada said, one who is an offenseless chanter of the holy names, he becomes Jagad Guru, and the whole world is influenced by him to take up Krishna consciousness. So actually, everyone should think, how can I be like that, a Jagad Guru, who can influence the whole world to take up Krishna consciousness? So, that's what you have to be, an ideal acharya. So that includes so many things. Giving them prasadam, engaging them in kirtan, by your loving dealings with them. I was brought into this movement by an amazing preacher named Vishnu Janaswamy. He didn't follow any... He took guidance from the super soul how to attract people to Krishna consciousness. He was so in tune with the mood of Lord Chaitanya that he would just... He looked in some rule books. Can I do this? You know, I'm talking, sitting with people. Can I do? Am I allowed to say this? Should I do that? No, he wasn't like reading a rule book as he sat and talked to people. He was from the super soul. He was getting inspiration, how to help people connect with Krishna. Just like he made our Indradumna Maharaja devotee, Vishnu Janaswamy. He made Indradumna Maharaja devotee. So can a non-vegetarian person be spiritual? Sure. He just has to give up eating meat. Because meat eating is gross sin. It's a grossly sinful thing. However, there is a way you can eat meat without being grossly sinful. That's let the animals die naturally. Don't kill them. Wait till the cow drops dead from old age and then eat the flesh. If you want to eat meat, Prabhupada said the Christians can do that. If they want to eat meat, all the animals die naturally. He said, in the meantime, at least the cows, let the cows die naturally. In the meantime, you can eat some chickens or whatever. But let the cows die naturally, then you can eat the cow. But it'll make a huge difference to murder these cows. The karma from these slaughterhouses of killing cows is bringing all these wars on the planet right now. It's a heavy karma. If they just stop killing the cows, that one thing, the whole world will be, there'll be a whole new era of peace, even if they don't become Krishna conscious. If they'll just stop killing cows, there'll be a whole era of peace and prosperity unheard of in the modern times. Unheard of. But they're so addicted to their McDonald's hamburgers and the taste of blood in their mouths, cow blood. What you can do? I mean, it's very difficult. We have to get, the only thing we can do is give them prasadam, let them hear the holy names, and hopefully they'll come out of their bloodlust. They're like man-eating rakshasas. They're very thirsty for blood in their tongue. It's a very demoniac thing, these meat eaters, the meat-eating civilizations, very demoniac. I can identify my false ego coming in between my service, but not able to tame my mind. How do I fight this against my spiritual self? If your mind is fixed in Krishna consciousness, the thing is, Krishna tells you, he says, yato yato nishchalati manas chansala mastaram tatastata nayam yatad atmaneva nishamnayat. Just follow Krishna's instruction. He says, from whatever and wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must simply withdraw it and bring it back under the control of itself. When your mind's not Krishna conscious, bring it back to Krishna. That's all. Related, when the different religions existing, how do we see them as material conception when they themselves were established by different representatives of God in a particular time? Yes, they're all done by that, but the followers have politicized them and used them as some... The followers took the original pure idea and made it some sectarian thing. It's like Jesus was teaching pure love of God, but they made it into some sect. Actually, there is one book that didn't make it into the Bible, and in that book, Jesus was advocating vegetarianism. The early Christians were vegetarians, and they also believed in reincarnation. But to bring the Roman Empire into Christianity, they changed their religion to allow meat eating, and they banned the reincarnation doctrine in order to get the Roman emperor to join their religion. You see, they compromised the teachings. How can I become a part of a spiritual revolution throughout the world, just as the grahasth at home and going out there to work in the mundane world being Krishna conscious? Well, take prasadam cookies every week for the break room. Be an undercover spiritual revolutionary. And you lay a Bhagavad Gita on your desk so everybody can see it. Just have a Gita sitting on your desk all the time. Have this nice book. You can do little things like that. And then whatever free time you have, you help this movement. Whatever money you're earning, you give as much as you can to support the temple. And that way you're also part of the revolution. Not eating meat, smoking, drinking are materialistic factors. Why are these factors important in determining your karma? Meat eating means you're killing another living entity to satisfy your lust for blood and flesh. That will oblige you to take birth in that species, so that creature that you killed can become a human being and kill you and eat you. Tit for tat. You see? Take that. As you sow, so shall you reap. So if you eat meat, you have to be willing to be killed and eaten by the very creatures that you killed, or you paid someone to kill when you went to the grocery store. If you're willing to switch places with the animals you're killing and eating, that's fine. Go ahead and eat meat. Be ready to be packed up down there at the grocery store in the cellophane wrapper, you know. Be ready to be chopped up and packaged and shipped off to McDonald's or whatever. Be ready for it, and for many, many birds. So you can think about it. Okay, let's see. You got another one coming? This is the last one. Okay. We have to, actually we're flying out early to Los Angeles tomorrow morning, so we have to kind of wrap it up a little early tonight. Got a lot of packing to do. Okay. With your mercy, in today's Srimad Bhagavatam class, in today's thought for the day, I see that I am so far away from the actual devotional service. Brahma-Bhuta's stage seems so far away, but I see and feel this is the only stage through which I can really serve you and your instructions. No, even if you're not there, you just aspire for it, that's okay. You don't have to be in the Brahma platform to engage in devotional service. Now, we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be, but you know, generally a neophyte is not going to be there. Yeah?
Then following the instruction of the spiritual master and serving exactly what he says, isn't that a Brahma-Bhuta state?
If one is fully obedient to one's spiritual master, that situates him in Brahma-Bhuta automatically. Brahma-Bhuta is the platform of self-realization. Where you're seeing you're acting simply for the pleasure of Krishna, and you're understanding your only happiness really is to act for the pleasure of Krishna. So it doesn't matter, the material situation doesn't matter anymore. You simply act in every material situation the way that'll please Krishna. That's Brahma-Bhuta, you see. You're equal to happiness and distress. You're equal to them. You see it all. I serve Krishna in this situation. If your mood is always serve Krishna, serve Guru and Krishna, serve Guru and Krishna, serve, that's Brahma-Bhuta. You're always thinking, serve Guru and Krishna, serve Guru and Krishna. You're in Brahma-Bhuta stage. If you simply follow your initiation vows, you're Brahma-Bhuta. That's a simple thing. So, that answers that one. So, I've just been delighted to be with you all here tonight, and are we offering the books, I guess, tonight? Okay. I do have a... when I was a young brahmachari, a monk, I one time wrote to my beloved spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, with a few ideas I had about what I could do for preaching Krishna consciousness in the world, to ask what he thought about this. One of them was writing books, and Prabhupada approved every single idea he had. He said, "Your proposals sound very pleasing to me. And right now I'm in Australia, but when I come to the U.S., I'd like to meet with you at that time. He wrote me a letter like that. He was actually in Australia. And so anyway, this is the fulfillment of one of those ideas I had Prabhupada encourage me. That your proposals sounded pleasing to me, he said. So, for the pleasure of Prabhupada, now I've come out with my first book, Truth Works. And why is it called this? Because if something works, you know it's true, you see. If I tell you Krishna is God, and by surrendering him, you'll achieve unlimited happiness, you know that's true by doing it and actually experiencing unlimited happiness. You understand? So true, you know it's true when it works. If it doesn't work, you know it wasn't true. It was hype. But that which is actually true, when you apply that knowledge, you actually achieve a result which is very, very sublime. So this book will guide you how to achieve that state of very, very sublime life where you're happy at every minute. There's no more anxieties in your life. And this book will also give you very, very good guidance how to instruct others also in this science. This book is actually structured on the basis of questions and answers. It's like we're doing a question and answer session right now in the last few minutes. This is a whole book is questions and answers and different subject matters. So the book is available. There's only a limited quantity here in Australia, and once they're sold out, they're gone, and that's it. So if you'd like to get in while the getting's good, now's your chance. And if anyone who takes a book tonight, you can tell me your name. I'll write a little note, a little personal note to you, a little blessing just for you with my signature. Right from the author himself. So that's it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.